This is the State of Things, broadcasting from Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio, and here's a surprise. The South is the region of the country with the highest population of self-identified LGBT people. And that's according to a report this year from UCLA. But for many LGBT people in the South, being open about their identity and finding a supportive community can be challenging. Deanna Kelly Saeed is the co-creator of a project that's called Out in the South. Deanna published the first part of the series in Yes Weekly earlier this year. In fact, it came out the day HB2 passed. Deanna Kelly Saeed joins me now on the State of Things. Welcome back. Good to
Thank
have you,
you
here.
I always enjoy being here.
Tell us about this project and how it began.
Well, the project is a collaboration between me and writer Steve Mitchell, who's also co-owner of Scuppernong Books. And we both had people important in our lives who were LGBTQ. And we wanted to have them have a discussion together. But as we explored their stories were so big and so powerful that we felt like we wanted to do a series. And as the two people we knew were middle-class white men, we also felt that it would be an injustice just to focus on those experiences.
Yeah, you started, I think, with those two stories,
yes,
and then
yeah.
decided to expand mm-hmm. it for those reasons. And it's multi-platform, so you've got a podcast and then these articles, these profiles in Yes Weekly,
yes.
right? And so what about that? What was your intention going forward? I mean, what was the point of it? What were you hoping to accomplish?
We wanted to capture stories of people who identify as LGBTQ. We had no idea it would be so timely. When we started the series, we didn't know HB2 was even a thing. But we felt it's so important to tell these stories because, as the first guest said, storytelling is something that's a lost art. So many of us get our information from social media. We have lost the art of listening, and we've also lost the art of telling stories. There's a lot of ideology out in the world, but you can't argue with someone's personal experience. You may not like it, it may not make you comfortable, but you can't argue with someone's personal experience.
Well, in most of these stories, you include, obviously, the intimate relationships between family and friends that are essential to sometimes the difficult story of coming out.
Very, very much so. And it's also interesting, as we wanted to look at five different generations, different genders and ethnicities, how the language and the experience may have shifted. Mm-hmm. The first person we spoke to is Mr. Carmichael, who's a professor at UNCG. He's in his 70s. He grew up in a wealthy family in Atlanta, Georgia. He was actually institutionalized and suffered many addictions throughout his life until he came to terms with being gay. But it took him a long time. One of the youngest people we interviewed had less of a struggle with coming out. So it's interesting how this has shifted, but everyone has a different story. Everyone we spoke to has a different experience.
Tell us a little bit about Kevin Varner and his relationship with his father.
Kevin Varner is he grew up in Julian, North Carolina. He's an HIV-positive man in his mid-40s. When he came out to his father initially vomited and had a horrible time experiencing it, and they were estranged for many years. After 9/11, Kevin actually was in New York and saw the buildings fall. He called his father, he got through somehow on a payphone, and said, "I'm okay." And that was the first time his father had said to him, "Come home."
Mm.
And that was his way, that was his father's way of telling him that he loved him.
As you said, this is both a series of print profiles and a podcast, so we have tape of Kevin Varner talking about navigating his identity as a gay man.
You have to be so hypervigilant when you're gay, because until you square yourself with who you are and you stop silently apologizing for your presence, because there's this balance, you know, if you go too far, if you're too overtly gay, then you risk, I'm just going to say it. I mean, you risk being strung up on a fence in the middle of Wyoming somewhere and left to die, or you risk having stones hurled at you and you risk being bashed and you risk violence. If you're not brave enough, then you live a kind of half-life where you spend your entire life trying to measure up to a standard that just doesn't fit, and then you just die every single day 1,000 deaths.
That is a clip of Kevin Varner from the multimedia series Out in the South, and with me now is the series co-creator Deanna Kelly Saeed. What about the South? Why are you focusing on the South?
That's where I am. And that's where, if you want to hear stories, you have to start in your own community. I feel it's very important.
You also talked with someone named Cohen Crisp, Cohen Crisp is a trans man. Tell us about his experience coming out. It's quite a story.
It is quite a story. Cohen Crisp has changed his name. It's now Cohen Cawthorn, and I hope I say that right. But his story was so fascinating because initially Cohen came out, was born a woman, and initially Cohen came out as gay. So his family, or her family at that time, had to deal with that. And then a few years later, Cohen came out as trans. And then he had to come out twice, which for some trans people, not all, but for some transgender individuals, they do have to come out twice. And Cohen's story was also fascinating because he went into detail the transitioning process and all that goes into that. It is quite involved. It is not something that people take lightly, that trans individuals take lightly. It's quite a commitment, and it's expensive and emotionally exhausting at times. It really humanized that experience for me.
And one that he only undertook after a personal relationship with someone who was going through that. So I think, again,
yes,
this idea of personal relationships becoming intimate to understand the details rather than the sort of ideology. We actually have a clip of Cohen talking about his first testosterone injection, and he was still identifying as Brooke at the time.
Call it relief, call it a rush of adrenaline. But the first time I did it, it was a calm center of the universe for the first time. Oh, like a moment. And we immediately went to Starbucks to get coffee, and I noticed that I was standing taller already, mm-hmm. and then I was just so relaxed. And my friend was like, I don't understand. Oh, you are relaxed right now. Shouldn't you just be like, bah, and hulking out? And I was like, number one, that's a myth. Number two, no, I just feel great. I feel like myself for mm-hmm. the first time.
Was it like you were finally taking control?
Yeah.
Is that what that showed?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Taking control and feeling worthy. I cannot say that enough. Feeling worthy enough.
A clip from Cohen Crisp talking with Deanna Kelly Said in the multimedia series Out in the South. Deanna is here with me, and joining me now is Ivy Gee. Her story is featured in the series Out in the South. She works with a nonprofit, the Guilford Green Foundation, that helps LGBT folks in Guilford County. Ivy, welcome to State of Things.
Thank you very much.
Tell us why you chose to participate.
I chose to participate because I feel that the unique story that I share is for families to understand their children better, for people who always take that nurturing and they want to make sure that they are protecting their child and understanding that during the process of coming out, that unless you accept wholeheartedly, you're really one of those hypocrites that you're trying to protect your child from. So I wanted people to be aware that the more love and the more support that you have coming from your inner circle, you're able to shine and you're able to be yourself and really overcome those obstacles and not really feel scared about anything, especially at a time like this.
Your story does intimately involve your mother. The two of you, it seems to me, share the spotlight. Tell us more about her and coming out.
Well, I was sort of outed. it completely caught her off guard, but...
It was your sister, right? Forgive me for interrupting.
Oh, yeah, it was my sister, that wonderful sister of mine, who assumed that I asked her if I could come and live with her because I had shared the story with my mother that I came out and that wasn't the case. I just wanted more freedom because I really couldn't be myself in my mother's house because she didn't know. That was the longest 5-minute ride home after my sister outed me, and I had to come to terms with, okay, now the most important woman in my life knows me, and she always knew me, but she knows me because now she's heard it, and it's the truth. We had some hard times getting over that situation. She definitely felt like something was wrong with me. She wanted to definitely protect me. She cried her eyes out. She thoroughly said, Ivy, you are a woman, and women don't get a fair shake. Ivy, you're African-American, and African-Americans don't get a fair shake. And Ivy, now you want to put gay on top of all of that? Come on. Why do you want to do that to yourself? And she was scared that I wasn't going to be accepted and that people were going to look at me sideways. And then she had to come to that understanding that, hey, the role that I want to take in my child's life is to honor her. to make her feel special, to make her feel welcome, to understand that these are just ways about her that I have to come to terms with, and I can't halfway accept her. I have to accept her all the way.
In that moment, I wonder what your thought was. I can imagine the turmoil. On the one hand, wanting to be accepted. On the other hand, it's your mother, and she's you can hear, in a way, a kind of love that she's expressing. Which was there an emotion that was dominant, a kind of pity for her, or a sadness that she wasn't able to accept you in that moment? What was going on with you?
Oh, boy, you betcha. I had some mixed emotions. I would try to please her. I would come to church in a dress, and at that time I was a full-time college athlete, okay? We were working out 3 to 4 times a day. I didn't have any hair, and I would sort of kind of make her loosen up a little bit to say, hey, Mom, you think that the kids are wondering why Ivy's not in being comfortable, but you then want to stick me in a dress and I look like superwoman with no hair in a dress. This is really going to raise and turn some eyes at church because you want me to be in a dress and not really understanding how that's making me feel. We had some difficulties. She would try to ask me in the nicest way, hey, Ivy, do you think you want to come to dinner alone? You know, not saying that you can't bring anyone, but we just kind of want to see you by yourself, you know, to try to make things easy to where I didn't have to, you know, put her in that understanding. And I think at that time she was more worried about what people would say.
Sure.
And how people would receive her. And she didn't want to be the gossip of the town, because Graham is a really, really small town and the school was very small. And, you know, I would find myself trying to throw all of the attacks off of me. If someone said, hey, Ivy, we heard about you and this girl, I would want to wear a dress.
Well, the church is even smaller, and your mother's a pastor, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. So, and how much of that entered into the conversation? Both the social aspect, what are the folks in the church going to say, but also, you know, what does the Bible say? Was that any part of this?
Oh, yes. She gave me all of the quotes from the Bible that next morning because, again, she had to drive me everywhere I needed to go. And I was so isolated, I couldn't just walk away in the car from her wanting to give me all of the information that she gave. She let me know of how much of a sin that I was going to burn in hell for my decision. She wanted to get me fixed. Let's go to the psychiatrist. Let's see what's going to happen. This is a sin. This is a sin. And it seemed like it was forever a sin until that one day that she realized, if I'm going to take this lifestyle that I'm choosing to be a part of and follow my Christianity and know that I have to honor my child and accept my child. And at that moment, it seemed like maybe hell had frozen over.
Let's hear her voice, your mother, Jessie Warren Vincent, talk about her support and the church's role in that support.
And I can't identify the day, the time, the week, or when this, it became a comfort. It became a way of life. Kind of thing. Even at this point, I still know how the churches feel, and I still know how it became, I've got to be comfortable in me, with me accepting. The church experience is still one that I know the majority, especially in the Black churches, I don't think they will get there in my generation. I really don't, and I don't know what it's going to take.
And that's a clip of Jessie Warren Vincent from the multimedia series Out in the South. She is the mother of Ivy Gee, who is a participant in that program, and I'm talking with her. She talks about, I mean, obviously there had been a kind of conversion, the kind that often appears or at least is spoken of in the gospel, a full conversion, a seeing anew. What changed for you? Anything?
Well, what changed for me was the moment, like I said, that she had this blessing and this aha moment that she wanted to accept me wholeheartedly. It made me feel invincible. It made me feel like I could do anything that I set my mind to. And, of course, I knew that because I love being the girl who got in suits and put on a bow tie or a tie that I was going to get the strangest looks. And I found myself, when I would go to the bathroom kindly announcing or saying hi in a really nice soft voice, so no one would get concerned about why is Ivy in the suit in the bathroom. But being able to share this experience really had folk in, people in this community coming up to me. I will always remember this gentleman who came up to me. We were actually colleagues working together, and he said, Ivy, that story hit right on time. And I said, what do you mean, brother? He said, before I read your story, my daughter was going to her prom, her eighth grade prom, and my wife was dragging her around to all of these dress shops, and she wasn't happy. I could see that she wasn't smiling, but she was going to do it for her mom. And then we read your story, and my daughter was shining so bright at her prom, she was able to find the nice pantsuit that made her feel comfortable, that made her feel engaged, and it made her want to go and show off with a smile instead of just, you know, giving in to what people felt like was normal or what people felt like was okay. And I felt like this was the reason why. It had to be the reason why. Why not share? Why not inform people and let them know that the reason why we're able to be who we are and be so fabulous, that's what they like to call us, is because we are supported and supported by the people who matter the most. And I said in that story that anybody could walk up to me with their idea or their opinion of me, but it doesn't matter because my mama loves me and she accepts me.
It took a lot to get to that point. You hear in your story, in Cohen's story, in your mother's story, over and over again, the story you told earlier about her father who initially vomited at the news and then has a way of turning around. This is a conversation we don't want to have because of that anticipation of the pain it's going to cause. And then ultimately, it's freedom. Everybody is trapped by this lie of gender identity. We're all trapped in it. It nauseates us to imagine a new story until we do, and then we're finally free, a freedom that we can't anticipate. What do you think it would take to get us to have the hard conversation, to go through the nausea and the emotional pain, to get to freedom on the other side?
Understanding that we have friends in this community, all of our allies, everyone that wants to encourage conversation, never giving that second look, always being accepting and welcoming, you would be amazed at how people will open up and share and want to educate as long as you're willing to learn and listen. It wouldn't do anything for me to share my story and then people still want to judge me and still have their point or their saying. And we can't stop anyone from having their opinion. But we can say, if it's something that you know is going to be hurtful, or something that you would be ashamed to say, as I am airing this on the radio, then don't say it.
I've got just a few seconds left, but Deanna Kelly Said, what's the takeaway for you for this project? And you're going forward. It's building, right? There's more of it.
It is building. I think stories are so important now more than ever. We're in an age where we're doused with ideology, but when you sit down and engage in active listening and you allow yourself to see someone else and to be seen, that is transformative. We forget how transformative that is. And right now we are at a critical juncture where we need to start having these conversations and sharing our stories.
Thank you both for getting this conversation started. Deanna Kelly Said, Ivy Gee, Deanna, co-creator of the multimedia project Out in the South and Story Booth. Ivy's story featured in that Out in the South series as well. And you can find information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Jazmae Kelly and her band and a new album. And here's a sample right now.